Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And now, Reverend Gordon Kyler.
Well, for those of you who are here for the first time or with us on Facebook for the first time, we are in the middle of our summer 12 Powers Reel-to-Reel series, where we are taking different popular movies and examining the powers that are represented in those movies. Now, they weren't written to represent those powers specifically, but we know that Spirit speaks to us in many, many ways. Some people say, well, the Bible is the only word of God. No, everything that has ever been written, everything that has ever been said comes from the mind of God, filtered through our human consciousness. And sometimes in movies and books and literature, poetry, you name it, songs, messages come to us. And so we've been learning about our 12 powers, which are 12 gifts that every human being has, regardless of religion. Every human being that has ever been and ever will be is born with these powers. And we believe in unity, and it is what Jesus taught and what others have taught, that when we can develop these powers in balance with each other, we become more effective. We become more Christ-like. That's what Jesus said. Do as I do. Follow me. Be like me. And that's what we are learning how to do. He was our way shower and our teacher. So if you're new, you may be wondering, what are those 12 powers? Well, they are faith, strength, love, wisdom, the power of power, imagination, understanding, will, order, enthusiasm, elimination, life. And so far we have done faith, which is the power to believe, love, which is the power to be loving, strength, which is the power to persevere, wisdom, the power to choose, power, the power to act, imagination, the power to see or visualize, and understanding is our ability to know and comprehend. Today, we're going to look at the power of will. Will is understanding's partner. Will is represented by the disciple Matthew, and his color is silver or gray. But what's important is to know what it does, what it is. Will is our ability to choose, to decide, to know, to lead, and determine based on our senses, our thoughts, our feelings, and beliefs. And will and understanding work hand in hand. We use will to make life-enhancing choices or not. It works both ways. Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, in his book, Power Up, observed that underdeveloped will results in us being indecisive, wishy-washy, unable to make decisions, whereas on the other hand, overdeveloped will causes us to have a need to have everything our own way all the time. Boy, wouldn't that be nice if everything was our way all the time? Probably not. It causes us to exhibit a my way or the highway attitude. Overdeveloped will can also demonstrate a stubbornness or a difficulty with change. I know we all love change, don't we? It's just our favorite thing to do. And yet, the universe, life itself, is about change. Will allows us to be in alignment with that evolution, because that's what change is. It's evolution. If things aren't changing, you're not living to the fullest. Things should always be changing. Now, will allows us to work with change, to be in the process of change with grace and ease, rather than resisting it and fighting it or struggling with it. So another way to think of the power of will, it is the energy that moves all of the other powers into action. They're just there in potentiality until will is put into it. And will creates that emotion, that movement. The Reverend William Winifred Houseman taught us that And I quote, "It is our job in developing our God-given potential to re-educate the will, the directing power of our mind, to teach will, to become receptive to spiritual motivation. This is why it's important to partner it with understanding, rather than to our outer goals determined by our materialistic desires and needs. Because one way or another, we are always using our will. Half the time, we're not even aware of it, but we are doing it. We choose a course of action. We resist or we resent. We submit or we fight back. We aim high or we slide backward. Or we are willing to consecrate and dedicate our will to Spirit, to God. That's when we come into alignment, and that is when will truly gets lifted up to that higher vibration, that higher energy. We look to Jesus as our way shower and teacher and how he used will. He used will in overcoming the human selfish motivation and allowing it to be replaced by oneness with God, by producing good for all. He was the prime example of the proper use of will. He even coined the phrase, "Not thy will, not my will, but thy will be done. I will get out of the way and let divine will work through me and as me." And there's a lot of rewards that come with this when we are in that consciousness, in that space. They include health, happiness, joy, and peace, harmony and prosperity, and other good that we cannot even visualize in our present state of consciousness. We look around us quite often and we say, "Oh, if only there wasn't so much chaos in the world. Oh, if only there wasn't poverty, only if there only wasn't violence, if there only wasn't you name it." And we can use our willpower, our human egotistical willpower to change it. "You will be perfect and whole. You will be like me." Or we can be willing. And willingness says, "How can I be a force for change? How can I make a difference? What is my role in this?" And that's one of the most important questions we can ask in life. What is my role in life? When we're complaining about what's going on, really we should be saying, "What is my part in it? Am I a part of the problem or am I a part of the solution? Am I willing to be a part of that evolution, a part of that solution, a part of change?" So how do we do it? Well, we start by first awakening to the possibility of will, by consciously watching the activities of will in our own consciousness and growing through spiritual understanding. When we're making a decision or when we're judging something outside of us, can we stop and say, "Whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What is the high expression of will in this? How will I change this? How will I be a part of this? How will I be the energy of the divine in action?" So we work on developing the capacity to become willing, consciously consenting to the will of God. And instead of saying, "I will," say, "I am willing. I am willing." Those are three of the most powerful words we can speak. And when we really think about it, that is the theme of Mary Poppins. I mean, of Mary Poppins. That's next week. Of Sound of Music. That is the theme of The Sound of Music. The concept is the very heart of Maria and the story of the Von Trapp family as it follows their journey and Maria's journey from being a novice nun in the abbey to leaving and becoming the governess of the family, falling in love with the captain, and to their escape from the Nazis. And we see in this movie, how many of you have seen it recently? Is there anybody who's never seen it? Oh, a few people? Really? Oh my gosh. You got to watch it. It's based on a true story, and I'll get into some of that in a minute. But what we see in this from the very beginning, that Maria, Julie Andrews in the movie, has a very strong will. She definitely marches to the beat of a different drummer. She's late for everything except meals. She doesn't have her clothes right all the time. She gets the idea to go up and sing in the hills when she should be at the Abbey doing work. There was a song at the beginning of the movie that's, "How do you solve a problem like Maria?" How many of you remember that song? And all the nuns are saying, "Mother, Mother Superior, Maria, it's just, she doesn't fit with us. She's a gadfly." And they sing this great song about, how do you solve a problem like Maria, as if she's a problem that needs to be solved? But even while they're singing it, if you watch closely, you'll notice that some of the things they're complaining about is kind of tongue-in-cheek almost, like, we kind of admire this about her. We kind of like the idea that she's a free spirit. We're genuinely fond of her because she is a very loving, caring person. And she has a life, a vitality, an energy that sometimes is a little much for the quietness and sacredness of the Abbey. So the Mother Superior says, you know, maybe you need to go out in the world and see if you really, this is really the life you want. Maybe God, and she says this, maybe God has a different path for you. Maybe your journey is somewhere else. Your gift is needed somewhere else. So she says, there's a family not far from here that lost their mother. There are 7 kids and the captain, the father, and they need a governess. So she goes out, and that's where the song, "I Am Confident," comes in. And if you notice, it's all about being confident until she sees this big mansion. And she goes, oh my. We all have those times of doubt. But she then remembers, I am willing. I am willing to go where God sends me. And so she arrives, and she meets the captain and his children. And the captain is a submarine commander in the Austrian Navy. And it's at the very early days, right before World War II breaks out. And he's very regimented in the movie. And he has a whistle he blows. And when he blows the whistle, there's 7 different ways he blows the whistle, 1 for each kid, and they have to come up and march and do stand at attention and all of this kind of stuff. And Maria is just kind of like, really? This is how you call your kids? And she says, I'm not going to whistle. And he's insisting that she does it, so she whistles for him. And he goes, nobody whistles for me. Oh, yeah? Illustrating the obvious point that no one should be summoned that way. Now, in reality, there was a reason why that happened. I'll share that with you in a minute. But Maria does not succumb to all of this, nor does she succumb to the mischievousness of the kids. They have chased away numerous governesses before her. And one of the first things that happens is she reaches into her pocket and there's a frog in her pocket. How did that get there? But she doesn't succumb to it. She sees the truth in front of her. She sees the truth of these children. And she even sees the truth of the captain. And so she does things like she wants the children are wearing uniforms. And she says, no, they need play clothes. And she makes play clothes for them out of the drapes because he wouldn't buy her material. So the captain, in the meantime, has gone off to meet his girlfriend, and he brings her home. She's a baroness from Vienna. And when he comes back, Maria confronts him about his detachment from his children, about the lack of his involvement with the children. And he doesn't respond well, and he's ready to fire her. But then he hears something, because while he was gone, Maria taught the children how to sing. That's where the song Do Re Mi came from. And she taught them how to make beautiful music. And she won their hearts over. And so when he's getting ready to fire her, he hears the children singing. And something shifts. Something shifts in him in that moment. And he opens up. He opens up to the beauty that is all around him all the time, to the love of his family, which is all around him all the time. And also, even though he's engaged to the Baroness, all of a sudden he sees Maria as a person, and something begins to shift in him. You see, Maria, had she gone in with her ultimate goal of forcing the family to be the way she thought they should be, rather than going in being willing to do the will of God. Even when she was being forceful and standing up to the captain, it was about what was best for them, not what was best for her. What is the principled thing to do? There's a very early scene where Maria has realized she's falling in love with the captain, but he's engaged. So she flees and goes back to the abbey. And she's talking to the mother, and says, and the mother asks her, "What is the most important thing you have learned here at the abbey?" And Maria responds, "I have learned to do what is the will of God and to do it wholeheartedly." Now that sounds beautiful and devout, but what does it really mean? For centuries, humanity has tried to figure out what God's will is. You go to many churches and they will tell you, "This is God's will, do it." I promise you, God will never say, "You have to do this." God's will comes from within. The knowledge of God's will comes from within. And it's that voice that says, "This is what you are called to do. This is what is right. This is what is needed." You know, it requires a great deal of trust to be willing. I know there have been many times in my life when I've said, "God, give me a sign." Anybody ever been there? "Do you really want me to do that? Give me a sign." And then after you've given me that sign, give me another sign further down that says, "It's all going to work out all right." Because oftentimes when we're willing to be in that place of change, that place of growth, a place of service, we don't know how it's going to turn out. At least I've had that experience, have you? When you wonder, "Oh, how can this possibly work out for good? Show me a sign that it's all going to happen. It's all going to work out. Everything will be okay." But what if no billboard shows up? I know most times there has not been a billboard. What if no billboard shows up and we have to kind of just trust? How do we know then what is the will of God? Well, what I'm coming to believe is when we can accept that our will is God's will and God's will is our will, when our will is grounded in spiritual understanding, when our will is based on our spiritual principles and is more interested in doing the right thing than being right, we will be in alignment with Christ consciousness. We will be aligned with our purpose, and we will be effective, because in that moment, God's will and our will become the same thing. And we cannot help but do God's will when we consciously develop and practice and master these powers. Paul Hasselbeck, in his book on metaphysics, explained it this way. When we ask, "What is God's will for my life?" the very question implies that God has a specific will for us, a kind of divine plan or predetermination where God has already made all of the choices for our lives. But this kind of interpretation of God's will implies a separation, a sense of an anthropomorphic God out there micromanaging our lives. In actuality, the will of God is nonspecific for any of our lives and circumstances. He goes on to explain the divine plan is for each of us to make the very best choices to express the maximum amount of goodness. For goodness and Christ consciousness are the ultimate goal. And at our present level of awareness, we do this by tapping into and using the power of will. He says, at our highest level of present awareness, we use this. That's an important distinction. It isn't about shooting all over ourselves. or shaming ourselves. It's about practice. It's about being as sincere in developing our powers. If we were all masters, there would be no reason to incarnate. We would have accomplished what this earth is about, what we came here to learn. This is a practice. We are here to develop these powers, to grow and to understand. Maya Angelou wrote, "When you know better, you do better." So we are in the process of knowing better, of learning, of growing. This gives a whole new meaning to free will, doesn't it? No? Yes? Are you awake? Okay. Torquem Saridarian wrote this, "It seems to me that the term free will is one of the most manipulative and exploited terms there is. The real explanation of free will is not that you have free will, but your will make you free, that your will liberate you, that will can release you from slavery. Practicing the power of the will at its highest level frees us from the slavery of fear, of resentment, of competition, of lack, of unforgiveness." That's the free will we're talking about. That we have the free will to fully align ourselves with Christ consciousness. And that's what Maria was doing in the movie. She had a very strong will, grounded in faith, grounded in love for the family and the children, and eventually love for the Father. And she had the will to fight for those children, even when it almost cost her her job. And the will to surrender to a higher power when needed. There's four great leadership lessons, according to the author Jeff Loftus, from this movie, from Maria von Trapp, from her actual life. She was and is, or was, a real person. And those four principles are summed up in the movie, How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria? She's a whirlwind of energy, good humor and music, but she perplexes and bewilders the older nuns. Now, far be it from me to attempt to solve a problem when a group of devout women couldn't find one. But instead, I can look at these four lessons, these four principles that Maria used. The first, courage of her convictions. She never wavered from her firmly held faith. That faith gave her the strength to pursue her life, believing that whatever came her way, something valuable was contained in that experience. There was something to be learned, something to be discovered. So courage of convictions. The next one is to always be open-minded. Oh, that's a tough one. To be open-minded. You know, there's a fine line between having the courage of your convictions and refusing to give up because you're delusional. We can have the courage of our convictions, but we also have to have an open mind. Because our convictions are there to evolve, to grow, to become even more than they have been. The quality that keeps a person on the right side of that courage of conviction is open-mindedness. And so the Mother Abbess sends her out into the world. And she's frightened and disappointed at first, but she's also open to possibility, open to the wisdom of others, and successfully incorporating their guidance, in this case, the mother of the abbess, that guidance into her life. She's open to possibilities. The third one is optimistic. She's optimistic. You know, if you're not optimistic, it's all but impossible to be open-minded. You have to be optimistic to have that open mind. And Maria would have to be incredibly optimistic to get married to a guy with a choir-sized group of kids. By the way, they had three more later. And at a time when the Nazis were in the process of taking over their homeland, where they lived, she demonstrates bravery on a level most of us will never have to. In the movie, she escapes over the mountains with the kids and her husband running from the Nazis. But before they do that, they have to make a choice, Maria and the captain. They faced the choice of giving in to the Nazi demands and keeping their world and their lifestyle intact. They had a very good life. They were very wealthy, very prosperous, very prominent in their community. And they could have just said, okay, we'll do whatever you say, and kept that. But instead, they refused to surrender, and they fled to, well, for 3 months across Europe, that's not in the movies, and then eventually made it to the U.S. Sooner or later, we all face a dark night of the soul, just like they did. And everyone wonders, in those moments, if it isn't time to give up. But what Maria's leadership style teaches us is that it's not time to surrender. That's the time, according to the song, you climb every mountain, ford every stream, follow every rainbow till you do what? Find your dream. And now, guys, would you show the clip? And I want you to notice Mother Superior, her attitude, her way of dealing with it. She, too, was willing. Her first concern was for Maria when she asked, did they mistreat you? In fact, the very first line she says, you are unhappy, I'm sorry. Not, you have to be happy, you're a nun. Or you have to be happy, you're doing the will of God. Her next one was concern. Have you been mistreated? And then she says, there are other ways to serve God. Just because you're not a nun doesn't mean you are not serving God. That's an appropriate developed power of will. The Reverend Mother is using her will for the higher good. There's an earlier scene where the Baroness is using her will to try to get Maria fired, to try to put Maria in a bad light and get her to leave. And the beauty of the juxtaposition of those two scenes is that we get to see a beautifully developed power of will and a very manipulative power of will. We also see that this movie is set against the backdrop of World War II, and we can't help but notice the comparison of the consciousness and loving use of Maria's will and the exploitative and destructive use of the will of the Third Reich. Remember when we looked at the will of the power of power with Harry Potter and Voldemort, and we saw the two different ways power is used. Will is the same way. Both can be used to build up or to destroy, to heal or to wound. Maria used the power of her will to protect and love her family. Years later, when she was interviewed, her friends and family described her as a very strong force, a strong-willed woman and a force of nature. And she said, yes, I am. But I am also in the flow of nature. I also am willing to do what Spirit tells me to do. I was very blessed when I was around 10 years old, our family went to the Von Trapp Lodge in Stowe, Vermont. And Maria and all but Martina Gretel in the movie were still alive. And there were also three more children who were born to Maria and the captain after they immigrated to the United States. And the lodge is still there. It is still run by one of the sons and some of the grandkids. And it also nowadays includes a giant brewery and a cheese factory. But one of the things I learned is that Maria was not thrilled at all with the way the captain was portrayed in the movie, because she said that is not what he was like. He was actually a very kind man, a very compassionate man, and very dedicated to his children. And ask me after the service, and I'll tell you the real story about the whistle. It's kind of fascinating. The other thing you have to know is they did not escape by climbing up over the Alps. They escaped on a train to Italy. But it's much more dramatic to go over the Alps and then you get to sing a song about mountains. But this movie, the story, their life is an example of developing our will. So now we ask ourselves, where am I being called to develop my will? Am I being called to search my mind and my heart and align with my true nature, with my higher power? Am I being called to seek understanding, to seek love, to serve, to deepen my spiritual wisdom? In The Sound of Music Theology by Norman Allen, it's written, "The Sound of Music has been delighting audiences since its premiere over 50 years ago. The beauty of its cinematography, the feel-good music, the lyrics, and of course Julie Andrews' presence are memories we carry forward from our childhood. What people often miss, though, is the distinctly spiritual lesson of this movie. It turns out that you can build a theology around The Sound of Music. All music." The mother abbess quotes Psalm 121 when she encourages Marie and her new family in their escape over the Alps, saying, "Remember, I will lift up my eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help." Metaphysically, that means we lift our eyes up, we lift our consciousness up to a higher place, to the energy of the divine, and that is where our help, where our inspiration, where our wisdom comes from. The real theological lesson is, though, is in the arc of Maria's story. In the movie's opening scenes, where she feels her deep devotion and commitment to life, to all life, and to a nun's life. And she believes firmly in this calling, no matter how challenging it might prove. What you don't really necessarily pick up on unless you're paying attention is she has spent 3 years as a novice and hasn't made it to being a nun yet, partly because she is challenged by the rules. But the mother abbess sees her gifts. She sees the gifts in the failings of Maria, what other people would call failings. She sees them as potential maybe for something different. And that's okay. That's important. That's okay. Maria, there's a scene in Maria in the movie where she's praying at the end of her first day there, says, "Dear Father, now I know why you sent me here. You sent me here to help these children prepare for a new mother, little knowing that it was her." And when she realizes the depths of her feelings for the captain, it becomes scary as she flees back to the monastery. And it's easy to forget that she too is going through a dark night of the soul. She enters a period of solitude that's just briefly kind of touched on in the movie. It says she's been cloistered in a room for a long time and only emerges from her cell when the mother abbess demands that she do so. And it is through the guidance of this wise older woman that she finally leaves the path of the spiritual ascetic and embraces her role as a teacher, as a parent, as a partner. Probably the most powerful line in this movie is when the mother abbess says to Maria, "You have to live the life you were born to live." Paul says the same thing in essence in 1 Corinthians. Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are varieties of services, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of activities, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. And he goes on to list a whole range of gifts, noting that knowledge and wisdom are not the same. But they all have a place. And we all have different visions, different missions that we are called to do. That's the lesson that Maria learns through the course of the movie. Her gifts cannot be expressed cloistered within the abbey. She lives her faith best out in the world, sustaining her new family with unconditional love, and as the captain notes, bringing music back into their lives. There's something about Maria's journey and those alpine meadows and the knowing nuns that has inspired all of us in many ways that sacred texts can't always reach. That's the beauty of these stories, the beauty of these movies, these books, is that, let's be honest, the Bible and other sacred texts are pretty hard to read, aren't they? Because they're very old. They were written in a language we don't use, with idioms we don't use. We don't even understand what half of those things mean anymore because culture has changed. But the lessons still come out. They're constantly being presented to us through all different kinds of media and messages. There's a moment in that movie when Maria has returned to the villa, and then she walks back in, and the children see her, and the look of surprise in their faces, the look of joy, that's the moment when she fully steps into who she is, when she fully realizes the impact she has had on other people's lives that she could never have in the Abbey. Perhaps that moment, more than any other, captures why each generation finds new delight in this movie and why it's so important to us. I'm going to close by asking a question. Are you willing? Are you willing to embrace your gifts, to leave the safety of the Abbey, to consciously develop your power of will so that you can fully bring to the world the gifts that are yours to bring? To use your power of will to activate all your other powers and to make the biggest contribution to life that you can. Are you willing?
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.